Thanks for listening to this Word in Your Ear podcast. If you'd like to get early access to all our productions ad-free, priority booking for our live events, and to take part in our weekly quiz, go to patreon.com/wordinyourear for more details.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This episode of Word in Your Ear is supported by Pact Coffee, who just posted some of their energizing and flavorsome wares to our home addresses, which has been a very happy experience all round. There's a lot of reasons why this seems a great arrangement. They deliver in packages small enough to just tumble through your letterbox if you don't happen to be in, and the beans are ground just before they're dispatched. And they make a point of paying the farmers and growers fairly, and even have the name of the farmer on each packet so you can trace your coffee all the way back to the place it was grown. There's 15 different types to choose from. Enter the whole new, almost psychedelic universe of bourbon cream or fruit nut espresso. One of the ones we got sent had hints of chocolate malt milkshake, for goodness sake, and made it seem achingly fashionable. Anyway, if you fancy taking advantage of this Pact Coffee deal, and you'd frankly be foolish not to, go to pactcoffee.com. That's pactcoffee.com, where you can get 50% off your first and third order. As we said, 15 different flavors, and it's delivered direct to your door. That address again and all the info at pactcoffee.com. And don't forget to enter the code Your Ear.
You're listening to a podcast from The Word.
So, Alex, it's just you and me. Mark Allen's gone. He's left us, hasn't he? He's gone off. He's gone to a wedding, you know, so he's a devil at weddings, you know. So he'll be leading the he'll be leading the dancing, as you can imagine, you know.
It's but a first, Yorkshire wedding, isn't it?
It's a Yorkshire wedding, yes. And I had to, it took me a lot of work to get Mark to be specific in where in Yorkshire, because I think he thinks it's just it's one simple place, you know what I mean? You know, that's what, you know, coming from Hampshire, that's how he looks at the rest of the UK. But yes, it's a country wedding in Yorkshire. And so I'm sure you'll be having great fun. So it's you and me. And where are you, Alex? You're still on the briny. Whereabouts are you?
I'm still on the briny. I don't know exactly where I am. I'm somewhere between Ketchikan in Alaska and Victoria in Canada. So there's a maritime law which states that any ship going from continental USA, which is the main bulk of the land, to Alaska, has to stop in one Canadian port. It's called the Johnson Act or something like that. They're doing a sort of token stop where they park for about 3 hours in Victoria on a Friday night. That's us tonight.
Is this your first time in Canada? Ever?
I've passed through Toronto Airport once, which doesn't really count, I suppose. Doesn't really count at all, actually. But it will be my first time on Canadian soil. I haven't got off in Victoria so far on this stint, mainly because I had a very stressful Paul McCartney to deal with, and I just wanted to hide away. But this week I'm going to get off, and I'm going to enjoy the pretentious Canadian local craft beer.
Good.
I'm looking forward to it.
Do you know what is the main difference between the American accent and the Canadian accent?
It's oot, isn't it?
It's oot.
I'm going oot.
Yes, we're going oot. It's a boot and all that kind of thing. Yeah, all right. So you're across.
Doesn't Nova Scotia New Scotland in Latin.
Yeah, I would imagine so. Yeah, of course it does. Yes, of course it does, Alex.
So that's sort of drawing the dots with the oops, you know, it all starts to make a bit more sense. No,
there's quite a bit of history in all those names. Oh, well, anyway, I'm sure you'll have fun. There's we always tend to end up on these podcasts covering a certain amount of deaths. I'm sorry, that's just the way it is. And a couple of them quite significant this week. Vangelis, the synth meister, and so forth. Were you aware of Vangelis? You know much about Vangelis? You ever have a Vangelis record, for instance?
I've noted the name for sure. I always thought it had a soft G, that which shows how much I know. But I know that he scored Blade Runner. He wrote Chariots of Fire, didn't he?
He did. Well, also, it's quite interesting because he goes back, obviously, to, you know, the Greek group, Greece's Beatles. I don't think it's putting it too far to say that, were a group called Aphrodite's Child. And he was one of the prime movers in Aphrodite's Child. And the other one was Demis Roussos. And so, you know, out of that group came two very, very, very big names, you know, big worldwide names. They had a record, I think it might even have been a hit in the UK, called Rain and Tears, something of Ryan saying, in the late 60s. Anyway, they got out of Greece because Greece was getting fairly unpleasant because there was a military takeover and popular music was rather frowned on, and settled in Europe. And he ended up, you know, I suppose the biggest claim to fame was he did the music for Chariots of Fire. And Chariots of Fire, a 1981 film. I don't get the feeling, nobody ever talks about having watched Chariots of Fire in the last 30 years, but everybody knows the tune. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Absolutely. It really has. You know, everybody hears that tune. And they instantly can launch into some kind of joke running motion, can't they? You know, slow motion running.
That's just what evocative of.
Yeah, it just is. And it's evocative of a film that nobody watches. And that's the strange thing. I was at a film scoring session the other day, Alex. I was very fortunate to be there.
Ooh.
And I have to tell you, when you're sitting in a film scoring session and you're watching the action that they're setting the music to, which certainly in this case and probably in a lot of cases, you're watching incomplete because they're still making it. You know what I mean? And there's all the digital jiggery pokery has yet to be completed, but there has to be some basic version for the film music to be set to, you know, to be performed to. The thing that strikes you, or struck me, and it must surely strike loads of people when they're sitting in those scoring sessions, is the films look ludicrous. But the music sounds fantastic. You know what I mean? Because what you're hearing with the music is the finished music, the completed music. You know, I was hearing it played by a pretty big orchestra, you know, so it's a really impressive sound. Whereas the film is still sort of, oh, you know, bear with me. This is a bit of a placeholder. This will all make sense eventually. You know what I mean?
Well, actually, you know, I was privy to a conversation a couple of weeks ago with a composer called Joby Talbot, and he was talking about composing for ballets and the way that's all structured and how it works. And it's not something you'll ever think about, not knowing how it works, you know, until you're told. But when he's composing for a ballet, he's composing for a choreograph that's not been invented yet. So, And the composition itself moves according to the little bits of dance that then the choreographer will put in, but he has to imagine what the dance may or may not be like and just do something that's kind of evocative of what he thinks it might be. And then it's a completely kind of fluid and moving piece of music that changes its whole nature over the course of the whole production being finished, which is astonishing, because when you think about writing a song, you know, you sit down, you write the thing, it's finished, it's done. Yesterday, didn't exist than it did, right? But writing for a ballet is—it's
constantly coming back, isn't it? You know what I mean? The process of doing it is incredibly, incredibly time-consuming. Because it's interesting.
Wasn't Vangelis in Yes for about 5 minutes as well?
Yeah, I think he was. Well, he subsequently made records with John Anderson. You know, I think he was going to be in Yes. I'm not sure about this. He was certainly, yeah, he was on the sidelines at one point, but he made these records with John Anderson, which were very successful. I got one of them in front of me now. Was it The Friends of Mr. Cairo, which has got a really interesting song on there, which they wrote called State of Independence, which then was a very big hit for, wait for it, Donna Summer. You would never. Yeah, it was. It was a very big hit. You know, they must have done very well. Must have done very well out of it. So yeah, that and then obviously after Chariots of Fire, he did the music for Blade Runner, which I was watching this morning, and that's interesting because also with Blade Runner, he claimed he pretty much improvised it. He just sat there at a keyboard, and did it. But Blade Runner is obviously part of the attraction of having that kind of music with Blade Runner was they wanted something that was set in the future. And when is Blade Runner set, Alex? When in the future is it set? I'll tell you, Alex, 2019.
Oh, that hurts.
3 years ago. Yeah.
It's like Back to the Future, isn't it? Back to the Future's future is now very much in the past.
I'm sure it is. So that's Vangelis. And the other person who's death I only discovered about this morning in the New York Times is Bob Neuwirth. People may not know unless they're a big Bob Dylan fan. And he was spelled Neuwirth. And he was a contemporary and a mate and a collaborator and a facilitator of Bob Dylan's in a really interesting way. They first met in 1961 at a folk festival when he said that Bob Dylan was the only other guy wearing a harmonica holder around his neck. You can imagine. Can you imagine this? 1961, folk festival somewhere in Massachusetts or whatever. And so there's usual kind of traditional folkies with fingers in their ears and there's a dance troupe from the Hebrides over there and there's, you know, an Eastern European ladies, you know, women's choir or whatever. And then into this, just chuck a couple of 21-year-old guys, both wearing head-to-toe denims, both trying to look kind of interesting and misunderstood, and both sporting a guitar and holding a harmonica holder around that.
One of us is going to have to change.
Well, this is clearly what happened, and so they kind of bonded. And what's more, they're both called Bob. You know,
interesting.
And what clearly happened is that Bob Dylan utterly kind of transcended Bob Neuwirth. You know, and people who knew the two of them. You know, and they worked together over the years. And, you know, Bob Neuwirth came back and put together the band for the Rolling Thunder Review in the mid-70s. And Bob Neuwirth, I think if you look at the, I think I'm right in saying this, if you look at the clip of Bob Dylan doing Subterranean Homesick Blues, holding up the famous cards and throwing them down, to, outside the Savoy, standing to one side is Bob Neuwirth, who was his kind of mate. We just happened to be on that tour. Excuse me, I'm going to drink of water. You know, he's on Don't Look Back and so forth. He was the bait, but he was also, you know, Bob Dylan, you know, like so many people of his ilk, is just a sponge. You know, Bob Dylan, you put Bob Dylan near anything at any stage in his life, he'll listen to it, watch it, and he can just absorb it really, really quickly and really convincingly. Well, imagine, Alex, that he didn't just do that with music. He didn't just do that with clothes. He didn't just do that with hairstyles. He did it with people. And Bob Neuwirth, no, you think about it, you know, he just adopted Bob Neuwirth. He made himself Bob Neuwirth. And you talk to people who knew the two of them. They say, oh, all the kind of smart ass hipster behavior at press conferences, that all came from Bob Newhart. But Bob Newhart, the difference was, didn't have the nerve to do that. Bob Dylan had the nerve to do that. You know what I mean? And so he kind of, he just absorbed Bob Newhart. And so Bob Newhart was fated to kind of spend the rest of his life, you know, just utterly in the shadows. And this guy he'd met in a field in 1961. And I think there must be loads of people like that. You know, there must be, if you take, you know, really well-known performers, really kind of just really vivid performers, there must be loads of people who were their mates who were kind of like them, but didn't have the nerve to go as far as they did. You know what I mean?
Oh, because that's a book in waiting, isn't it? Surely.
Well, I suppose it is. Yes. You know, because as I've banged on about this for years now. I'll bang on about it once more. Bob Dylan's greatest creation was Bob Dylan. And he just deciding to be that person. It's like Jack Nicholson's greatest creation was Jack Nicholson. Marlon Brando's greatest creation was Marlon Brando. Marilyn Monroe. They became that person. That wasn't everything they were, but they just found a way of distilling themselves into a person that everybody wanted to be. And Dylan did that. And all I'm saying is a certain amount of it came from Bob Newhart. And, you know, so, and amazingly, Bob Dylan has outlived Bob Newhart, you know, who's sadly passed away this week in his early 80s.
The Word Podcast, prime cuts of popular culture served fresh each week.
I want to get this off my chest. Do you remember when you were at college or in the sixth form, you used to be given a list of set books? Do you remember that? Set books.
Yeah.
And what set books always seem to have one thing in common, which is nobody really wanted to read them. You know what I mean? They sounded like the sort of things you ought to have read, but you didn't really want to read them. They weren't, you always think, there must be something more exciting I can do with my time rather than read the set book. Okay. So that's the set book. The set book idea. Album reviews nowadays, you know, the music papers have gone, you know, so nobody kind of does that kind of thing. But the only people who really review albums are the heavy papers, yeah? And particularly the American heavy papers. I'm talking about the New York Times and the Washington Post and magazines like the New Yorker and so forth. They review popular music. But they review it in a way that reminds me of lists of set books that I might have been given in the city. And I'm going to give you examples of this, because the way they review them is they review them as kind of serious contributions to modern thought rather than the way most of us would respond to music.
Something you might quite enjoy listening to.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And here we go. These are just a few that I've plucked recently from American newspapers. Okay, from the New York Times. Here we go.
Okay, go on.
Sam Smith's Ode to Self-Acceptance. Sam Smith's Ode to Self-Acceptance. Do you read that and think, oh, gosh, that sounds like fun. I must go and give that a listen. Or go on.
I read that, I immediately think, God, that sounds stressful.
There you go.
You know what I mean? You might feel a little bit flustered listening to it.
Okay, it gets worse. Here was the next one, also from the New York Times. Billie Eilish's Portrait of Power Abuse. Portrait of Power Abuse. Nobody ever said that about an album by Lulu or Kate Bush, did they? Whatever. A Portrait of Power Abuse.
Very much doubt that Billie Eilish had that at the forefront of her mind when she was writing her latest banger for the kids.
Here we go. Next one. Kehlani's Songs of Self-Improvement. Can you imagine that? Yeah, can you imagine a 15-year-old rattling along to the record store thinking, I must get his new song of self-improvement? No, you can't. Here we go, the next one. Luxury and mockery on Pusha T's It's Almost Dry. Luxury and mockery on Pusha T's It's Almost Dry. Doesn't sound like fun, does it?
Sounds like a right laugh, doesn't it?
Here we go. Here's the next one. On his new album, Kendrick Lamar explores therapy, grief, and masculinity. Therapy, grief, and masculinity. Oh, my God. The sun's just gone in, hasn't it, Alex?
Yeah.
Small children have stopped laughing. Birds have stopped singing.
Birds have stopped tweeting.
Everything, you know, a dog was chasing a string of sausages down the road on the back of a butcher's bike that he's just given up. So there's no point.
Dog's just turned vegetarian. He's given up.
Kendrick Lamar's got a new one about therapy, grief, and masculinity. Okay, next one. Two more to go. Olivia Rodrigo's confessional music is catharsis for a brutal time. Catharsis for a brutal time. It's a pop record for crying out loud. Catharsis.
Yeah, it's Olivia Rodrigo, pop song. She writes a great tune.
God's sake. God. And finally,
does anybody go into a record shop? Excuse me, sir. Have you got anything that's cathartic in stock? Actually, I think you're all fine.
And they've probably got a new set. Well, they don't have record shops anymore, Alex. They would tell you news. But if they did, they'd have a catharsis. Have a look. Yeah, you want to try under self-empowerment.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Okay, and finally, Emma G, a singer-songwriter who specializes in empowerment. Oh, my God. What has happened to popular music? Pull yourselves together.
The Word Podcast. Fix yourself a drink and it's like being in the pub.
And we're joined for the next section of the podcast by a friend of the pod and professional musician. Let's not beat around the bush. Owen Parker. Hello, Owen.
Hello, David. Hello.
And I asked Owen along because Owen said occasionally out of the blue, he just sends me an email. Something has happened to him. Something has happened in his musical life. And this week he sent me such an email, which I thought would be interesting to go into. And tell us, why don't you share with everybody, Owen, the subject of the email? Go on.
I think the subject was everything in its right place.
Right, go on.
It's my ongoing love affair with Radiohead and how I had last Friday... I'll look to see what the new releases are. I'm generally disappointed with new releases. But this time, there's a side project from Radiohead called The Smile. Awful.
I mean, there's millions of side projects from Radiohead, aren't there? Bewildering variety of
But I'd always been wary that Atoms for Peace, anything involving a Red Hot Chili Pepper, just personally. Tom York solo records, I've listened to once. I think I enjoyed them, never went back. And I'd seen some clips of the three of them. It's Tom and Johnny and a different drummer. It's not Phil Selway. It's Tom Skinner, is it, from a band called Checks His Notes. A jazz afrobeat, according to Wikipedia, band called Son of Kennet or Sons of Kennet.
Oh, yes, of course. I've heard of them. Yeah,
go on. Sons. I hate to sound like I'm just looking at the wrong bit here. Anyway, I'd seen some clips of the three of them rehearsing, and it had been, right, okay, I'm quite into that. And I went on the mailing list because I thought I might want to go and see them at the Roundhouse, and I had to be on the mailing list. I then didn't bother with getting tickets, or I missed it, or I was at work, or something happened. And so I parked it. Then I saw it had come out, and I listened to it, and it was astonishing. It was so astonishing. It was up there with my favourite Radiohead album, which is In Rainbows, 2007, the one they just released and said, pay what you like. And it's Nigel Godrich, long-time producer from... 25 years ago today, OK Computer, because Six Music's been playing 1997 songs all day. And it hit such peaks that I just thought, has there ever been a side project which eclipses or at least gets on a par with its main outlet that's still going? Like, I think in Beatles terms... we had two Virgins and Wonderwall music. We didn't. Yeah. Any Macca stuff didn't happen until all Klein nonsense, and they'd split up or they
happened. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Whatever. What was it? Repeat Offender or Main Offender? Keith Richards? Well, I don't know.
Oh, well, quite, yes.
There was one good track on there, Hate It When You Leave, I think I quite liked. But this, it made me worry for the other three. Drummer Phil... Ed O'Brien and bass player Colin, who's Johnny's brother, because it sounded like Radiohead.
Because it's really good. I have listened to this. I'm no expert on this at all, but I gave it a listen after your email, and I thought, this is really striking. It's really good. I'm not sure if we've mentioned that. This is The Smile, isn't it?
The Smile, awful name.
It's the worst names
of the Beatles. As bad as what Queen used to be called.
It's absolutely a terrible name. And it's like, if you're trying to pick a name that you thought wouldn't appeal to Radiohead fans at all, The Smile is it, isn't it?
I've always thought that the whole fact that the trope of Radiohead being miserable is a bit of a... I don't know. When I got OK Computer, I immediately went on a cheap Greek holiday aged 22, 23. And OK Computer is the Island of Kos for me in 80 degree heat. And I find it beautiful and uplifting. I can understand that if, you know, you're in Billingham in November, it reaches for the most depressing part of the UK you've ever been to. And it's so beautiful. Another good thing about Tom York, you can't understand his lyrics, because I have read reviews to say it's all about the end of the world coming.
You're bound to get that.
But the other strand of it was that I have recently, I've bought good speakers for the first
time. Yes, I want to know about this, you see. Yes. Now, you said, I think in your email, that you'd been listening to The Smile repeatedly.
Yeah.
I think you said in the kitchen.
Yes.
Now, it struck me, this is an interesting point, and this is the very kind of thing that we like to talk about this podcast, because I think my theory is that most music nowadays is listened to in the kitchen.
Okay.
And it never used to be.
Right. It's
because, go on.
It's out of necessity. It's the biggest room in the house as an extension. It was the selling point when we came in. Oh, my God. That's like the rest of the house is sort of very modest and average. But there's this extension the previous people had done to the kitchen. I can't get in the living room anyway for Fortnite and Xboxes and YouTubers shouting, playing Minecraft and stuff. And so these speakers are in the kitchen, and they're extraordinary. I have my brother-in-law, Ben, has special needs. He's autistic. One of his massive autism traits is Larry Carlton, the guitarist. He makes up 70% of Ben's autism. And his deep love of Steely Dan. So the thing is, Ben has all Larry Carlton albums on vinyl and maybe two or three times on CD, because he'll have to get all remasters. And then when the buggers bring them out 10 years later, he'll have to get all of them again. But Ben, with his demeanor, is not shy at coming forward. He will speak his mind. And for the last however many years, he's always come up to me at family gatherings here and gone, Owen, your speakers are rubbish. And I've got, go away, Ben. I don't care. I mean, I had these 150 quid Richer Sounds things. And I had this idea of, do you know, I think they sound great. I work in studios all week round. I deal with audio. And I just think, you know, maybe you don't need to, you know. Also, I did speak to a very good friend, very successful, loads of Grammys engineer. And he said, mate, don't go the audiophile route. It's a deep, deep, dark hole once you start dipping your toe in it. And that's why I kept with my 150 quid Richer Sound speakers.
You see, I think you are like most people nowadays.
Yeah.
You know, because the pursuit of kind of hi-fi perfection feels to me like it was the 70s and the 80s.
Yeah.
And then it kind of went away. And MP3 and everything. And convenience trumped quality, it seemed to me, for years and years and years.
Yeah,
now, are we coming out of that stage into something new? Because I want to ask you about your speakers. And no, you don't have to name the brand. You can do if you want. I don't care. Okay. How much did you pay?
How much? I got them half price through credits and stuff, actually through a friend who plays in a version of The Animals with John Steele, the original drummer.
Right.
And he's an audiophile, but he's from Burnley, and they're quite stuck in the 60s and 70s in Burnley. He's in my phone as Valve, basically, Danny. And a jam night in Burnley is, old, you know, proper Wurlitzers, proper Leslies and Hammonds and stuff. They don't use, you know, Nords and the new sort of stuff. Everything is old and vintage. I phoned him to say, I think I might need to actually finally get some speakers. I think I'm going to go for it. And he said, I was on tour. I was in Denmark or somewhere in Scandinavia. I've got a friend and he's a proper audiophile. And he played me these new Kef speakers, which are Wi-Fi. And they blew my mind. He said, I know, so I can get you a deal. So I broke the bank to get them. And it had sort of, and they set them up. And I had this moment of, what's the first song I'm going to play?
Go on. What is it?
I blew it. Woman in Chains, Tis Fierce. but I love that album. And I'd listened to it a lot in lockdown. And on my 150 quid Richer Sound speakers, that album is amazing. It's not great on the Kefs. But then I did discover it's now a pursuit of what sounds brilliant on the Kefs. And now me and my wife, I put both sides now from the Orchestral 2000 reworking, Joni Mitchell, and
all we right.
stood still and wept in the kitchen.
Really?
The double bass comes in, and you've never heard double bass boom it, with definition like that. Don't give up, Peter Gabriel, all the kind of the ones that you think would be, you know, that sort of thing. There goes Rhyming Simon. But then you get into this dark sort of thing of high-res lossless versus lossless, and all the Paul Simon stuff is high-res lossless. Which means it's better than a CD. And then I got all my CDs out of the shed, and a friend brought down a CD player, which died within a few days. And so I had CDs in the kitchen. My wife didn't like the look of that. And now I'm forever watching CD players on eBay going, I think I might just play CDs because, you know, they're lossless. So it's 24-bit or that sort of thing.
Well, I got a new CD player recently because I just thought, you know, because the old one kind of gave up the ghost, really.
Yeah.
And I'm enjoying the fact that at the moment you can go out and buy CDs for next to nothing.
Yeah. Well, there's things like I've got my copy of American Music Club Mercury and Johnny Mathis's Feet, which is in my top three songs of all time.
Johnny Mathis's
Feet. Have you heard the song Johnny Mathis's Feet? Oh,
I don't believe I have.
I lay all my songs at Johnny Mathis's feet. I said, Johnny, tell me how it is to live. And it's Mark Eitzel. Absolutely glorious. And actually, in the 3 days that this CD player worked, putting that on was a really nice experience. As I like playing vinyl in my kitchen, and I've built up a vinyl collection the last 5 or 6 years. But I have to say, unless it was made before 1981, all vinyl sounds rubbish to me. So
right, yeah.
I will buy OK Computer, or I will get it as a Christmas present on remastered vinyl. And frequently, I did it with the last Radiohead album, Moonshaped Paul. I had it on vinyl, and then I ended up putting it on vinyl and streaming it from Apple, but letting it spin around. So I'm listening to it by streaming, but I still have it spinning.
Are you watching?
Yeah. because it felt more of an immersive.
It felt more authentic.
Yeah.
No, you have to interact with the item itself. Otherwise, it's just stuff coming through, you know, coming through the ether. So you still haven't told me how much you paid for your speakers.
They retail at around 2,000. I paid 1,000.
Wow.
So there we go. And that's more than I've ever paid for anything frivolous like that. But it's changed my life listening to music. It really has.
Now, I want to ask you something. I'm going to ask both you and Alex this, as musicians. Mm-hmm. These are all terms, you know, because everybody's talking about, you know, the next big kind of wave of audio. Will people start being aware of quality and again, you know, like they were many, many years ago? And so, you know, if you travel on the tubes, as I've done today, you'll pass loads of posters that are advertising the new Sento is available in this format. And I want you to tell me what these things mean. And I'm going to go with you, Alex, first. Spatial audio. Spatial audio. Do you know what that means?
Spatial audio. Isn't that audio that's meant to replicate kind of the feel of being in a room?
Yeah, I suppose so. Fair enough. Do you know what 5.1 stereo is?
You need a system with quadraphonic type sort of things.
Do you need something behind you?
Yeah,
okay.
Things like Dark Side are probably made for it, but yeah.
Do you know what Dolby Atmos is?
Similar to spatial audio, isn't it? Isn't it?
I've tried listening to some Dolby Atmos on my Apple AirPod. I mean, I think there's a Rush album which is on there. It didn't sound very good to me, sort of thing. Maybe I didn't like the Rush album.
I think the problem is that I think they have a real communications issue with all this stuff. You know, the only things that ever meant anything to anybody were mono, stereo, and then MP3 because it was easier.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Nothing else other than real hi-fi nuts ever penetrated with the general public at all, you know. And I don't know whether it ever will, you know, because... It is. It's interesting. I think you said that. Did you say your speakers were all wireless?
Yeah, and I had problems because my Wi-Fi signal wasn't strong enough in the kitchen. It was a dark spot. So I then had to argue with Kef for a while, get a bit funny on Twitter, and go, "I have paid all this money," and it would. And it was like driving with the police in the rearview mirror. Because you're just getting to that bit in Brothers in Arms, which does sound amazing, just that one song, or Gaucho or something, and it just drops. And you're like, oh, God, can't I? You can plug in, but it's just mini jack. That's the vinyl goes in just through mini jack. And then the speakers can connect via Ethernet, but it's not very long, the cable, and they wanted an extra £100 from me. So I bought one for £5 on Amazon. Sounds exactly the same.
Right. But they do reckon with all this next generation of hi-fi that the big breakthrough is wireless, isn't it?
Yeah.
Is that, you know, that because what's the thing that killed quadraphonic, Alex? You're too young to remember. You're both too young to remember. I remember. The thing that killed quadraphonic was the wife of the hi-fi nut saying, "You're not turning my living room into, you know, wires going absolutely everywhere." Yeah. And quadraphonic never went any further than that. Whereas with this stuff, you don't have wires everywhere. I suppose that's the argument.
There's probably quite a few home cinema setups with 5.1 for movies, because then they will bring out a album, a Nine Inch Nails album or something remixed in 5.1. But I never know if that is yet another tax of just getting diehards to then buy it again, like my brother-in-law buying every Larry Carlton album.
that's extraordinary. So the other thing I just wanted to touch on briefly about the smile is that you heard it, it was streamed,
yes,
and you thought it was fantastic, and I listened to it and it was streamed and I thought it's really good. And I happened to go in a place called the Record Shop the other day, and I looked around and I couldn't see the smile, and I went to the counter. Same. And I said, have you got the smile? Not until the middle of June.
Yeah,
and I thought, they're streaming this thing and you can't buy it.
Well, the same happened with the last Laura Marlin album, but that was because she brought it out at the beginning of lockdown as a sort of, she put it ahead, didn't she? And it was a real, it was like March or April 2020. And it was a nice sort of, it's a lovely new album to listen to. I don't know if this is planned or because of the backlog and the fact.
Well, according to the guys in the Record Shop, it's not uncommon nowadays that's what they do.
Well, Adele took up 95% of the bookings or something for her 52 album or whatever it was. But
you mean in terms of getting things manufactured? Yeah. That is the other thing.
Yeah.
That is the other thing. And the last thing I'm going to say, you said that you wanted to buy a vinyl and it was difficult. You know, it won't come into middle of June. And I was told by somebody in a position to know the other day that vinyl is hanging by a thread because there is only one factory in the world that makes the blanks that they cut masters on.
Oh,
only one factory.
And is it, I mean, I suppose when there's a revival and a resurgence, it's still very small compared to churning out rumours in 77. It's 0.01% of whatever sort of thing. Is it in Germany?
It probably is in Germany. And the other thing is that the lathes for cutting, they last a long time, 40, 50 years, because they're in temperature-controlled rooms and they're well looked after.
Yeah.
But eventually they go wrong. The people who can fix them are dying. There's nobody learning how to do that kind of thing. Wow. It's, you know. Yeah. So that thought will send a chill wind through Brooklyn and Shoreditch. Vinyl is hanging by a thread.
This is a junction in the Word podcast. It separates that bit from this next bit.
I went to Holland Park this afternoon, Alex, to check out the venue, which is where our special Word in Your Park is taking place on June the 18th to mark the 80th birthday of James Paul McCartney. And we can now confirm that we have five turns, speakers, contributors, guests, and they are Julia Rayside, Danny Baker, Andy Miller, Jeff Lloyd, and we're delighted to announce that Graham Goldman will be joining us, and a man who's written so many great songs himself, as a member of 10cc and as a member of Wax, and writing for the likes of Herman's Hermits and the Yardbirds and all kinds of people. So if anybody's in a position to kind of to talk about Paul McCartney's contribution to songwriting particularly, it's Graham. And if you've heard Graham before, Graham's is a very genial guest and a really good talker. So Danny Baker, Julia Rayside, Andy Miller, Jeff Lloyd, and Graham Goldman, hosts me and Mark Henry Allen. The venue is Opera Horn Park in Holland Park. And I went down there this afternoon, and they've got the covered auditorium all set up. Of course, the beauty of the covered auditorium is, should it rain, which of course is not going to, Alex, but if it rained, you're protected. But it also, because it's open sided, it lets in the sunshine and the air, and it's a socially distanced setup with individual chairs and so forth, and two licensed bars. A splendid time is a guarantee for all. It's an afternoon, and so you've got the rest of the evening to yourself. You can go home and be looking at the inside of your ledge by 7:30 if that's what you want, or you can go out and paint the town red if that's to your taste. Whatever it is, make sure you've got your tickets by following the link below.
This podcast was brought to you by The Word.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.